Okay. So my let's see, I'm Laura W. I've been in OA since 1981, and in the hopes of keeping my talk to 20 minutes or less, I revamped my talk. So I'm hoping that I have it down to a good time. There's some part that I would add if we have some extra time. So anyway, 1981 is a long time ago, and so I'm going to start with an elevator speech of my recovery. And an elevator speech is something that I can tell you if I met you in an elevator, and I can finish saying it before either of us had to get out at our floors. So it's real quick. My name is Laura W. I live outside Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I came into OA in January of 1981, thinking it was a diet club. It took 6 months to come back to my second meeting, and I've been coming back ever since. It took several starts and stops of abstinence before I completely admitted powerlessness over the food and began to recover from this disease by learning to live in the steps every day, one day at a time. In admitting powerlessness, I learned to reach for power with a capital P and began a saner way of relating to food, the world, and to my life. So if you had to cut me there, that's my story. But here's a message of depth and weight that I hope to share with you today, and that's keep coming back. I believe we can all be free of the bondage of food and unhealthy food behaviors, living in peaceful neutrality around our addiction, feeling like a useful member of society, and developing the best possible relationships with the people in our lives by following the 12-step program of Overeaters Anonymous and taking the actions suggested by wise sponsors and in the big book, in the AA big book, to improve our conscious contact with power. So back when I first came in, writing a history of my compulsive eating to help me take step one gave me the opportunity to see how I had a relationship with food that was worth investigating. Like I said, I came in thinking it was diet club, and I didn't realize that I had a relationship with food that wasn't healthy. I'll try to give you a brief highlight of that history so maybe you can identify with some of the anguish I was having with food and eating before I even realized it myself. My first food-related memory was when I was about six and at a lunch counter restaurant. Is it all right to mention foods if I don't dwell on them, just like a quick name?
That's fine.
Thank you. I even remember what I ordered for lunch, which I won't tell you if it's not necessary, but for dessert, I ordered fruit cocktail. And my half-finished dessert was on the counter when I left to go to the bathroom. But when I returned, my dessert was gone. And I can still feel that sense of disappointment that ran through me all those years ago. I don't remember a lot of my childhood, but I know I wasn't obese, but I did need to wear chubby sizes around fourth or fifth grade, so I couldn't get my clothes off the regular racks. In sixth grade, I remember sneaking dry whipped topping from the pantry, which led to the habit of eating baking ingredients for many years. I think I was deathly afraid. In fact, I know I was deathly afraid of being fat. All the women in my family struggled with weight and were always on diets. I remember sneaking ice cream from the bottom of the rectangular half-gallon containers that used to come in. So when the next person took from the top of the box, they were in for a rude awakening of a mostly empty box. I wasn't the only one to do that in my family, and I was never sure if I was the one to be blamed that time or not. I went from being about 90 pounds and 5 feet tall in sixth grade to 117 in seventh grade to 145 pounds, and my adult 5'3" in eighth grade. That's when my dieting and compulsive eating really took hold. They definitely went hand in hand, so that I was either dieting or binging. I became a great dieter, and that's how I kept from getting too fat. I lost and gained 20, 25, 30 pounds every year from the time I was 14 until the time I came into OA when I was a little over 30. No matter what my weight, I was always dissatisfied with my body. I always looked at the largest parts of my body and I thought I was fat. Even when I lost weight, I knew it was just temporary and I was on the way back up again. My husband and I married in 1971, and in 1978, I became pregnant with my first child. I was so excited not only to have a child, but because for the first time in my life, I didn't care how fat I got. I thought I was supposed to eat for two, and I knew my clothes would expand so I wouldn't have to worry about needing new clothes. However, I didn't realize that maternity clothes only expand where the baby's growing, not in the lower part of the hips and thighs, which is where I always gain my excess weight. I needed to get larger sizes of maternity clothes for my pant legs to fit properly. All the book learning and training in the world couldn't prepare me for the lack of control a new mother feels when she's responsible for a helpless infant, and I'm a food addict. So food was the way I coped with when I was feeling out of control. Therefore, I couldn't lose most of the large amount of excess weight I gained during my pregnancy, which led me to the pay and ways again, and eventually into an OA meeting, which I went to only because my favorite pay and way didn't have a meeting that night, and I was feeling terribly desperate to lose weight that night. That first meeting was back in 1981. I sat in the back of the room with my black coat wrapped around me. Oh, it was in Cincinnati, Ohio. On one hand, it sounded like I might have been home. I liked the messages I was hearing. But on the other hand, all that talk about God and the cross in the front of the room and the closing of the meeting with the Lord's Prayer really scared the life out of me. And I was afraid it was a place I was not supposed to be. I had a binge and diet buddy from work who I had asked to come to the meeting with me. She wasn't available, but she asked me to check it out for her. She said she'd been to an OA meeting and she thought that they were a little crazy at the meeting. So the day after the meeting, I told her I didn't think they were crazy, just a little too religious. She didn't seem to mind what I perceived as religion and started to go back to OA at that time, while I spent the next 6 months trying more diets, over-the-counter pills, diet meal bars, where I'd eat the entire day's allotment before lunch, paying myself since why pay the pay and weigh when I already knew what to do, etc. At one point, my friend met someone in OA, and she mentioned me and how I was afraid of the religion of OA. The woman told my friend, "Tell your friend not to confuse religion with spirituality." I was shocked. I didn't know there was a difference. That was my ticket to come back into OA when I found out that there was a difference. I didn't know it. So I went to my second OA meeting in June of 1981 in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I've been coming back ever since. I got a sponsor and I bought a big book at that meeting. At that time, we more or less dabbled in the big book, never completely reading it and following the clear-cut directions for taking the steps. But we did read it because we didn't have a lot of our own literature. I lost 25 pounds in 3 months just by cutting out between meal eating. And all the years of dieting and restricting, it never occurred to me to eat only 3 meals a day with nothing in between. It was the stuff in between that got me binging every time, even if it was as innocent as a piece of fruit. As far as I was concerned, I had no particular binge foods. Since I could binge on fruit, lettuce, turkey, it didn't matter, especially since that's all I had around me, since I was afraid to have goodies in the house. Don't get me wrong, I could binge on the same stuff you binged on, but it didn't matter to me what I ate when that aching hole had to be filled. I always had baking ingredients in the house for company, because I wouldn't have the actual items in the house. And I was a champ at hiding small cups of sweet ingredients, brown sugar, baking chips, dried food, etc., in my pocket and sneaking back again and again for refills. So for my first 3 months in OA, I ate three planned meals a day with nothing in between, which include planned desserts and planned glasses of wine, etc. I lost 25 pounds by being on that food plan and just cutting out between meal eating, which gives you an idea of the large amount of food that I was eating between meals. I went to meetings, I called my sponsor, I did service, I used the tools. And in September, I broke my abstinence with an unplanned glass of wine, coupled with a celebratory unplanned cookie for dessert when my husband got a long overdue promotion. That's all it took for me to break my abstinence. I still went to meetings and I called my sponsor, but I couldn't get that abstinence back. I continued trying to work the steps, completing an inventory, but I also continued to struggle until May of 1982 with on-again, off-again abstinence, which was so painful. Since I had begun from OA to have a relationship with a higher power, and I glimpsed some of the promises of OA, OA had ruined my binges for me. I now knew too much with my head full of program and a belly full of food. During that 9-month period of time, I came to important conclusions about some of the foods and beverages I needed to put down for good, and the fact that it was much healthier for me to have parameters of the amounts of food I ate during mealtime. I will never regret any of the mistakes I have made in program with my food or following the directions and the steps, because every part of my journey brought me to recovery and put me on the path of my life today. In May of 1982, I became abstinent with the abstinence I call my gift today. I'm still in awe of it. It's hard for me to say it because it's such a miracle. I was led through the first three steps with an OA friend who had 3 months more abstinence than I did, and we're still close friends today. We sometimes laugh and wonder how the heck we did what we did, because we're not sure what we did or how we did it, and we know it was only by God's grace. Over the years, as I've worked all 12 steps, I've learned a lot about myself and my humanity, things I never learned in my family of origin or my education. My husband and I moved a lot, although we've always been in the Philadelphia area now for more than 27 years, which is another amazing thing in my life that I'm shocked over. And I always hooked up with OA in my new city, always sponsored and worked the program the best I could. When I sponsored people, I used drips and drabs from various places, books I've read, workshops I'd gone to, questions to take people through the steps, workbooks, etc. But I never felt that I had a method to help a sponsee replicate the recovery that I personally was having. In 2013, I asked someone from a phone meeting to guide me through the big book, and I began listening to other people who had walked through the big book methodically, working the steps as Bill Wilson laid them out in the book. I was finally hearing the message of depth and weight in a way I could pass on to others clearly, the language of recovery as presented in the big book. I have since sponsored many people in the same way my guide took me through the book, shining a light on the concepts and ideas of the spiritual principles of the steps as written in the book, so my fellows can have their light revealed to them as well. I learned I have a twofold illness, the physical allergy that commands me to eat once I've taken the first compulsive unplanned bite, the mental obsession that causes me to forget the devastation that the first bite creates every single time. I can't stop once I've started, and I can't stay stopped when I eventually do stop. I learned how the first step is more than powerlessness over food. It is the powerlessness that I experience just by virtue of being a human being on planet Earth. In step two, I acknowledge that I need power. In step three, I make a decision to trust the power other than myself. I clear away the wreckage of my past by acting out that decision and trudging through steps 4 through 9, and I learned to live in a new way of life by following the very clear directions of steps 10, 11, and 12 as written in the big book. Back in 2013, she told me to read pages 83 to 88 in the big book every day, and I still continue to do that. I listen to a recording of it or I read it. These pages outline the promises of steps 9 and 10, and they give me clear-cut directions of what I need to do every day to practice steps 10 and 11. I have some more details about that, but I don't think I'm going to have time to share them with you. But if you read pages 83 to 88, you can read it and interpret it yourself. Or if you want to call me, I can tell you how I've interpreted them. And then now to step 12. There's three very important parts to step 12. The first is the true promise of recovery, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Spiritual awakening, transformation, complete change in the way of looking at the world, a new set of lenses, so to speak. That means I've worked the first 9 steps and I'm continuing improving and practicing the spiritual principles I've been learning. Am I perfect? Oh no, you can ask the man in the room next door. No, we're not saints. We're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. The second part of step 12, we tried to carry the message to compulsive overeaters. The first page of Working with Others, chapter 7, says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking, for us eating compulsively, as intensive work with other alcoholics, for us compulsive eaters. That is a very strong promise, ensure immunity. Now, of course, there needs to be a healthy balance of 10, 11, and 12 to ensure immunity. I must remain diligent about my self-examination and staying in conscious contact with power while I'm working with others. Balance. Part 3 of step 12, practice these principles in all my affairs. What principles? The spiritual principles. I mean, there's so many of them in the world, but the 12 that they've given us in OA and the 12 and 12, the first one is honesty, the second one is hope, the third one is faith, the fourth one is courage, step 5 is integrity, step 6 is willingness, step 7 is humility, step 8 is self-discipline, step 9 is love, and step 10 is perseverance. In all my affairs, 12 is service. In all my affairs, even with the difficult people and the people I'm closest with and who I love the most, who are often the most difficult to practice some of these principles with due to the closeness we share, I need to report that the lessons I've learned from 1981 until now have not always been learned without lots of kicking and screaming and hitting emotional concrete walls. I often mouthed the words of acceptance that I was trying to learn, and it took a lot of personal pain to actually make their way to my innermost self. There was a lot of faking it till you make it and acting as if, a lot of blame and shame associated with my thinking and my behavior. I'd like to believe it was all part of the process of becoming a recovered woman that I had to endure as well. And the people in my circle of life had to endure too. The amazing miracle of grace that I now can see is that I never had to resort to compulsive eating, overeating during this process of becoming, no matter how much my perceived failures hurt. I always had the 12-step principles to apply to the hurts I caused myself and others, and mostly that the people in my life loved me and continue to love me, even though I missed the mark so many times. Finally, I was loved enough until I could begin to accept and love myself. I think the biggest miracle of all is that this ripe old age of almost 74, actually it's in a couple days, I finally can begin to accept reality and the mystery of life without fighting with myself and my fellows quite so much. I continue to attend meetings and workshops to hear the message of depth and weight and meeting compulsive overeaters who are seeking recovery. Very recently, I heard a speaker who emphasized the ABCs on page 60 in the big book in such a way that it made me read them in a whole different way. And I think of them all the time now. A, we are addicts and cannot manage our own lives. B, probably no human power can relieve my addictions. C, God can and will if I seek God. The purpose of my recovery work is to continue to seek power, and the steps are designed for living to do exactly that. And guess what? I no longer succumb to my addiction because of that power in my life. It's like the addiction has been surgically removed as long as I keep seeking power. Keep coming back at work. That's my message, I hope, for you. And that, if you like, could be the topic of your meeting, if you'd like a topic. Keep coming back no matter what, whether you're a newcomer or an old timer, whether you're struggling or you're not struggling. Keep coming back.